We are speaking with Tom Kramer, a visual artist, painter, and muralist, whose most iconic murals might be destroyed within the next few weeks. Tom, what's going on with this mural?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I suppose it depends on who you talk to, but I was sort of tipped off about its impending danger, I don't know, about a month and a half ago, and other people were too, and it's sort of this spontaneous movement emerged to try to get people onto this quickly to try to save it. And, you know, there's been two primary organizations. One is the anti-demolition movement, you know, Quit Demolishing Portland, which I've always been supportive of. And then there's the people that want to save, you know, the murals around town. Those two groups seem to be the main people involved with this effort. And the mural was, the mural was completely redone in 2003. And it was originally done in 1989. It's become an iconic part of, especially that part of Portland, and a lot of people are really upset about what's going on.
Tom, tell us about this mural. It's called The Machine?
Yes. The origin, the genealogy of how this mural happened was I used to paint a lot of cars around town. Those Portlanders who were old timers know that I did. That's sort of how I supported myself in the 80s when it was still really cheap to live here. Anyway, somebody flagged me down one time. I was driving around my Volkswagen van and they said, "Hey, can you do this on the side of a building?" And I said, "Sure." And so that's all it was. And it was a tiny amount of money and I did it. It took 3 weeks. And that was done completely with the wrong kind of paint. I really didn't know what I was doing. I did it all by myself. That 1989 mural was redone properly and had to be scraped, primed, completely redone in 2003. And that version is the copyrighted version that we're trying to save. And we've got, so far, all pro bono, but I've got two arts attorneys on it, Cole Haver, and then he's the head attorney on trying to, work on copywriting and trying to protect it through the Vera laws. And what we're going for now is to try to get whoever the new developer is to incorporate it into the new project rather than just tearing it down. And it actually can be done. The brick wall can be, dealt with steel reinforcement. And, I mean, it's really the right thing to do. And, you know, some people, that are involved with this are really of the camp that the whole concept of even thinking about tearing it down is criminal in and of itself. I have to be sort of neutral a little bit because I'm trying to figure out a way with the kind of the Vera laws to save it through legal channels is what we're going for now. And there is a Facebook page run by a friend of mine, Aaron Flasher, who's a big anti-demolition activist, and that's a good way for people to kind of chime in their feelings about it. I don't even know if you have to be a Facebook member to do that or not.
Tom, why is this piece of art so important in your opinion, and what's next, in terms of what people should watch out for?
Well, I think it boils down to the concept of enough is enough. I think people are collectively really fed up with the almost genocidal acceleration and destruction of so much of our heritage. And it's nothing new. I mean, there's tons of amazing stuff that's already been torn down in prior generations. But in this case, there's just a massive amount. I don't know what it was, 450 different beautiful old Portland houses torn down just in the last year. And now the new laws are not protecting anything. I mean, people can remove the historical status on formerly protected old architecture and just tear them down relentlessly. I think it has to do with, the rate of change, future shock. It's kind of once something is destroyed, people don't remember it, and then there's nothing to protect. For example, there was 95% of the old growth forests have been destroyed, so very few people know even what real nature is like because it's all gone. And it kind of boils down to those kinds of issues. It clearly has to do with in a larger issue, you know, the 1% thing, and too many people moving into this area too fast, and there's no, we're not even thinking about what we're doing. And it brings to mind sort of a nostalgia for people like Tom McCall and Wayne Morse and, you know, Ken Kesey and other sort of old-time Oregonians who are really kind of, you know, visit, enjoy it, and then sort of get out of here kind of thing. I miss those days. Anyway, this mural, I'm not saying the mural alone is touching on all this, but it kind of is in a weird way, and I think that the timing is kind of ironically sort of good, in quotations, for protecting the mural, because people are really angry, really fed up, and I am too, and I'm really happy to be, you know, by accident kind of joining this movement, because I don't like it any more than anybody else what's going on, you know.
Here's another thing I have to ask you about, Tom. Mm-hmm. Now, because of a lawsuit that Clear Channel brought against the city of Portland,
right,
murals themselves, during the time that Vera Katz was the mayor of Portland, murals themselves became a battleground because the city wouldn't even allow people to put murals up because it equated them with commercial speech. So even getting some of these murals on the walls of this town was a struggle, and now trying to get them to stay, you know, is a struggle. Can you just talk a little bit about is it okay if I call it the mural wars? Can you tell us your side of that?
Sure, yeah. You know, again, that's another big irony in the case of the machine mural, because the machine mural, ironically, very ironically, is not protected by RAC, but because of that, it is protected by the federal VERA laws, because RAC murals, to get one done, you have to forego your legal VERA rights. And so that's what's one of the weird ironies about this situation. It actually is protected by the VERA laws. My feeling about it is that I think people should, I mean, I'm kind of libertarian on that one issue. I think there should be no laws about murals. I think people should do whatever they want, wherever they want, and there should be no, I think the more murals, the better, you know. I don't like the idea of, I think it gets into Orwellian Big Brother kind of stuff when you start dictating aesthetics to, you know, the government should sort of stay out of that, you know.
The other thing that surprises me is that this mural is priceless. It is priceless. It's huge. It's bright. It's positive. And you see it from kind of a long distance away. It seems like, if capitalism was a thing, then these developers would figure out a way to capitalize on the value.
Well, that's exactly the irony. And, you know, one of the things that unintended consequences of that mural was, you know, I just kind of did it not really thinking about the future, because when you're younger, you know, I was 29 when I originally did it, you don't think about stuff like that. You're just kind of living the moment, and that's why it's so great. You know, a lot of good art happens when you're young, I guess, that kind of youthful, no future kind of idea. And now that it's still here, you know, it's almost 30 years later, what I realized in the span of those 30 years is how, to what extent that one mural really did change the entire nature of that neighborhood. I mean, it's sort of like the old stereotype. I mean, in every situation, it seems like the artist art goes in, and then culture goes in, and then suddenly the more adventuresome, you know, yuppies move in, and all of a sudden everybody else, the floodgates get open, and then everything. So in other words, what I'm trying to drive at is that the very thing that seemed to stimulate the quote-unquote growth in that area, where now that very thing is being threatened to be torn down. And what's weird is what people have suggested is, well, why don't you do another mural? You know, that would be impossible, because that mural really is of its time. You know, the 80s were a lot of fun in Portland. Those of us the 70s and 80s were a great time. Rents were really cheap. It was really free. You could pretty much do whatever you wanted to do. It was much more free thinking. You know, Satyricon was going on, 13th Precinct, X-Ray Cafe, all these great, you know, creative outlets. And it wasn't about money. It was just about freedom. And that mural kind of reflects that era. Now we're living in a much more bland and paranoid. I don't think the new architecture is, like, bad in the sense of really bad. What it is bland. I think we're facing You know, like J.G. Ballard or Aldous Huxley are kind of more accurate, even more than Orwell. We're entering an age of blandness and where everything's the same, where everything is safe and bland and boring. And a lot of public art, in my opinion, quite frankly, is boring. And what's great about that mural is that it's not boring, it's not bland. It's and I hope it stays, too. Obviously, I'm really biased, but... And I know that a lot of other people feel strongly about it, too, you know.
Hey, Tom, I think, though, that you did paint another mural on Alberta Street within the past 5 years, maybe six years.
Yeah, I did that. Well, you know, I want to emphasize the most well-known of my three murals around town is the one on William Street, and that was done with a bunch of people. It really is only, you know, like a paint by number. It was the 2003 version. Yes, you're right. There's one on Alberta Street and that I did with a bunch of kids, I think from Open Meadows High School. That was done in the early, I don't know, about 10 years ago. And then I did another one that was also redone correctly with Mark Meltzer and Joanne Oleksiak sort of helping and some other people in Goose Hollow. That's the least well-known. Most people don't know about that mural. That one's at 1711 Southwest Clay Street. And it's interesting, you know, just sort of the bohemian connections. There was an old guy that came out when I was working on the mural in that neighborhood and said, oh, yeah, the Grateful Dead stayed across the street in 1967 when they came to, or 1966. And he was talking about the old hippie beatnik culture in Goose Hollow. And, of course, that's long gone in Goose Hollow. But my point is that there's sort of an interesting continuum that happens with art. I mean, you know, I met that guy. That guy's probably long gone. That was a long time ago I did that mural. And then pretty soon I'll be dead and tell somebody, well, I met this guy from way back. And it's sort of like one of the great things is that there's sort of a sense of security about old buildings and old murals, and people feel a sense, it's just like old growth forests. People want a connection with the past. And when you destroy the past without even thinking about it, you kind of destroy the soul of a city, you know. And so that's why I've gotten really worked up about this issue. And I think that the mural on William Street being threatened really addresses much bigger issues like we've gotten into a little bit in this conversation. It sort of opens up all these other Pandora's boxes of all the other things that are serious issues about the environment and our culture. And, you know, when that mural was done in 1989, Portland was a much different city. Most of the businesses around town were locally owned. And now most of the businesses, or a lot of the businesses, are just chains. And it was much more kind of hippie beatnik town. And now it's much more of a hipster town. And those of you who know about the subculture would know the difference, the hipster being much more technological and involved with the Internet and stuff like that. I think the mural was kind of the last of the way I look at it, kind of the Luddite, or it was the pre-digital age, you know. And I think one of the problems with a lot of new bland architecture is it's all done on a computer. It's all designed on a computer. And I think that changes in a McLuhan-esque way, where the medium becomes the message. I think that it changes the way buildings look when it's designed on a machine rather than designed by the hand, you know. And if anything was handmade, that mural was handmade. There was absolutely nothing. It was completely improvised, you know. Charlie Parker, you know, beatnik jazz kind of way I did it. There was not even any drawings. I just got up there and started working. And at that time, you know, the neighborhood was, you know, heavily, there was, you know, Bloods and Crip problems and, you know, pit bulls and loud cars everywhere. And it was a really different vibe, much more exciting, much, much edgier than it is now. And I think to some extent, when you clean a city up too much, you wreck it. I think it's good to have a little bit of, not that crime and violence is good, but it's good to have a little bit of the Satiricons and the X-ray cafes and allow a little more tolerance for, you know, creative or alternative lifestyles, authentically creative alternative lifestyles, not the corporatization of all alternative lifestyles. I think what's happened is that a lot of things that started with, that were authentically, you know, real ideas have been quickly subsumed and incorporated into the, you know, commercialized. They've been very commercialized, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, Tom Kramer, thanks a lot for taking the time to chat with us this afternoon.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it, and I love KVU, so keep up the good work. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, March 8th from midnight to midnight as we celebrate International Women's Day with 24 hours of programming produced, hosted, and engineered by women. There will be live music, public affairs with the feminist focus, and female DJs playing all kinds of music to celebrate the creativity, variety, and zeal of the women of the world. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th, from midnight to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kvu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kvu.fm.
Follow KVU on Instagram at KVU Radio. Ear to the Streets.